Welcome to the Intriguing Beings podcast, Season 3, Episode 9, with Raphael and Julian Sal. Here's another episode, seems to be banging them out quite quickly, certainly for me anyway. It's been an amazing run of surf lately. I seem to have been in the water absolutely loads, which is fantastic. And we're getting to that magic period in Pembrokeshire where autumn is firmly here. The water's still warm, but the wind and swell has been pumping. Hopefully you've been out there getting some good conditions too. Always love this time of year. This week, I have got a really good episode for you. This was recorded back in May when I went to Montpellier to the offices and headquarters for F1, which is one of the biggest water sports brands in the industry. They've completely smashed the wing and foil market and really dominated that. And of course, they've had a very long heritage in the kiteboarding industry as well, and one of the most popular kiteboarding brands. Also big on SUP when that was around as well. It's one of the last family-owned brands out there, especially after Robbie Nash sold his company. So it's wholeheartedly owned by Raphael and Sophie, his wife. They set the company up years ago at the end of the 90s, and it's boomed as a kiteboarding brand. And now Julian, Raphael's son, has come on board. He started off with Monera, the water sports accessories brand. He's built that up to huge success, and he's currently being teed up to take over as the CEO of the company when Raphael decides to step down. Raphael's just turned 60 recently. He doesn't look a day older than 50, and he still kite surfs more than anyone I know. Anyone who knows me knows I've got a bit of affinity with these guys. I've spent a lot of time traveling with them, and I really like the ethos of the brand and how much they test equipment. If you've ever met Raphael or spoken to him, he spends a ridiculous amount of time on the water, sometimes up to 8-10 hours testing, and he just is so passionate about testing products. Everything that they put to market has been tested to within an inch of its life. They don't just come up with the design, do a few prototypes, and then ship it out to customers. They won't release something until they're absolutely certain it's perfect, and Raph has to sign off on every product they release. And he's got a real feel for the equipment and the gear that they make as well. He absolutely rips on the wing. He's an incredible hydrofoiler. He's an absolutely amazing kite rider as well. Like, to see him throwing kite loops at his age and doing the kind of tricks that he does, he's just magic on the water. He's always impressed me. I've had many a session at One Eye with him, riding huge waves and just been blown away by the power that he can exert. And I've actually been snowboarding with him in the Alps as well, and he just rips on a snowboard as well. In general, he's just great on everything. Julian, his son, I've known for a long time too. Often have a good laugh with Julian and a few pints of beer of occasion. And Julian's been very passionate about foiling for some time now. He's really embraced surf foiling. He's incredible on a prone, and he's really got into downwind foiling as well, and is kind of leading the company in that direction. Obviously, downwind foiling is a pretty hot topic at the moment. In this podcast, we talk about loads of stuff, from, you know, how the business has grown, dealing with COVID, some of the struggles that they've had to deal with along the way. And we talk quite a lot about downwind foiling and how they've not been first to market with equipment, but maybe come to market with some really good equipment. If you want to hear from the two guys leading the charge at F1, then have a listen to this podcast. I'm going to give Sophie, Raphael's wife, a special mention as well. She's a lovely lady. Always have a lot of time for her. And she's behind the scenes running things. You don't often get to hear from her in the interviews. It's always Raph and Julien that are the flagship, if you like. But it's worth remembering that behind every good man is a good woman. And that's definitely the case with Sophie. So without any further waffle from me, let's get into this week's episode. I really hope you enjoy it. So I've just spent the last couple of days down here in Montpellier at the F1 offices, which is always a pleasure to come and visit. I like hanging out with these guys. It always feels like visiting old friends rather than coming down to do any kind of real business or work. It's more of a pleasurable experience than some of these trips that we do. And I've been chatting to Julian, Sal and Raph, his dad, quite a bit over the last couple of days about things they've been up to. And we thought it'd be good to get some of those conversations down
on a podcast and let you guys listen to what's been going on a little bit behind the scenes, because the business has changed a lot. The climate has changed a lot in terms of the water sports industry. There's been some huge changes, I think, since I last spoke to these guys. So I've actually got both of them sat in a room, which is rare. So welcome, Raf, and welcome, Julian. Good to have you guys sitting down with me, and thanks for giving me the time. So first question, I'll let you fight over who wants to answer it. Obviously, coming here this time around, it's like the whole business has doubled in size, and we know the answer for that. Mm. How hard has that been to manage with the explosion of wing and foiling in the industry?
At the beginning of the wing, we didn't know how far it's gonna go, you know. So it was like, we go for it and then we wait. And thanks to maybe the COVID and all those things that happen, everyone rush into the wings, I think faster than what it should have been done in a normal period. Out of the lockdown, people were looking for something new, they need some new feelings, I don't know. But they rush into the wing business, the wing sport. So it was a big surprise. And of course, when you start from zero and suddenly you have a major sport, you have a lot of product to produce, invoice, send, delivery. It was a huge challenge for the whole team at the office, from production to selling and delivering everything.
Yeah.
But when we do something for the next generation, for Julien, it's the same goal. When we do something, we like to do it well. We don't want to do it like fast and quick just to be there, you know. So when I felt that the wing foiling is really a fantastic sport, we put all our energy and knowledge into developing the whole equipment. So by straight at the first day putting all our knowledge into it, I think we achieved to match what people were looking for. And the amount of performances and lightness and what should be the wing foiling as well, because I learned the sport the first day, beginning of March, with Mika in Cabo Verde. The morning we went into Santa Maria Bay to be safe, but right after lunch I went for my first downwind on my first day. So straight away I was feeling that downwind will be the thing, and the wing need to be light and able to free fly. So when we pull out the swing V1 in the summer 19,
yeah,
everybody really enjoyed the sport because it was done for what everybody is loving now, going upwind a little bit and go free fly downwind. So it's a mix of the two sports I've been practicing all my life. I did 20 years of windsurfing as a pro, and then more than 20 years of kiting, and suddenly winging is coming, and it's a mix of windsurfing and kiting with the advantage of both sports. You have the lightness of a kite in your hand, and you control the rig directly in your hand. So it was really fantastic to be able to mix my two favorite sports into one.
Julian, were you into the winging as early as Raf? Because I know, I remember being in Madagascar in 2019.
He's not going to tell the truth.
And Raf telling me, oh, you must learn this wing. And I was like, yeah, I've had one go with a company in Tarifa, and now I'm in Madagascar and all the equipment's really small, and I was making all the boards sink. So for me, it took a little while to get into. But, you know, obviously your dad started in March 2019. When did you decide that you wanted to jump on?
You know, at the office, in the family, basically, when my dad has an idea, and at that time, this idea was going full on into the winging. My mother and I, we used to be like, hi, this will never work, blah, 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 and you're in your new passion again, focus on kiting. But this time, I kind of shut my mouth because I knew that in the past I did these mistakes a few times of thinking it will not work, and at the end it makes it work. So this time I was like, okay, I'll try, you know, and I'll see. But I was not really sure about why would I stop kiting and do winging, you know. And then I tried, and I discovered the free fly, and then I directly understood what was the advantage of this new sport. So yeah, clearly as a surf foiler and kite foiler, I thought that it was a dream, yep. You know. So yeah, I think quite early this time I was following my dad.
Because you were surf foiling before winging, right? I remember you were getting into surf foiling quite
a little bit before, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember.
I'm not sure about that.
For sure, I used to surf foil.
Yeah.
Yeah. 19. Yeah, I remember when for you were sure. Surf foiling and took surf me, foiling.
I don't remember if you surf
I think
foiling.
It took me a year to get into surf foiling because yeah. I wanted to get better at surfing before adding a foil in my quiver. And then after a year, I realized that I will never be very good at surfing. So I just tried surf foiling, and now that's almost everything I do. So
yeah. Yeah. And so back then in 2019, that was the last time I was here, the company was, you know, much smaller in terms of the staff. And you were obviously working quite a lot behind the scenes on the winging equipment. But then when the sales must have started to rack in, so you were one of the first companies to actually have product available from production. There was only a handful really at the beginning.
Yeah, we were the first wing they get in middle of July.
Yeah.
But Duoton and Nesh, they had already delivered in May and June.
Yeah.
19. So they were in advance on delivering. We were a little bit after.
I remember all our customers and, you know, staff and everyone pushing us to release some wings, and then he was like, no, it's not good enough, so
yeah,
you're gonna wait.
Yeah.
And then when we released the swing, it was a huge success because of this, you know, because we didn't rush into just releasing something that was average.
Yeah.
So it took a bit more time, a few more months of development, but then when they released it, it was perfect.
I think we, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say
we start the development after the other, but our organization for prototypes, like we can get 4 or 5 wings per week and they come in 1 week, give us a big advantage on when you have to rush into development and you have proto every week. In 1 month, we could do as much proto maybe as some other company do in 6 months or 1 year sometimes.
Yeah.
So if you analyze that, I start learning the sport the 3rd or 4th of March, and the 10th of July, the first swing were delivered everywhere. It's a really short time.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's really crazy to learn a sport and be able to imagine what is the product we will need, finalize few sizes and produce them and be able to send them in July. It's super short.
Yeah.
We did well and fast.
It's one of the things you guys are known for, right? Which I think a lot of people don't realize is just how much prototyping you do. And you never release something unless you're 100% happy with it. And not just the prototyping, but the amount of testing that goes on as well. Like, it's a constant passion for you, I know, Raf.
It's more than 200 kite or wings we receive per year. So knowing how many days you have of wind is like a lot of wing we need to test, or kite we need to test every day. Fast and well, it's always the challenge.
Yeah.
Regarding the testing. Or we used to be 2, myself and Mika, and now sometimes we are 4 or 5 with Paul, Jules and Charles. It's really efficient when we come to the beach and we have 4 wings. In 2 hours, the testing is done. In the evening, the reports are written to Robert, our designer, and sometimes he's designing even the same evening and ordering four more protos. So it's going super fast for us now.
Yeah, it's quite an impressive process, because a lot of people think, oh, it's just testing and you say how you feel, but you write full test reports afterwards, you know, yeah. Full feedback for Robert, the designer, to then make the changes, right? It's not just a sort of a quick phone call conversation and I'll tweak this, tweak that. It's like very detailed what you guys do.
Every rider is writing his report, so Robert has a different vision of what we have done sometime, you know. Only one report, sometime you have only one vision. So if you can read what Mika is thinking, or Paul or Jules, it's helping also to mix the different feelings.
Yeah.
But we are now impressive machine of testing, because we are able to come to the beach with four wings, stop, go back to kiting, you know, in the same afternoon, do some twin tip or bandy testing. Or if we are fully winging the same day, we're able to test mast and foil or wings or boards. So sometimes the report is like after the session, only to remember everything we have done. It's a huge work, you know.
Yeah.
You have to remember every feeling of every product you have tested, and you go from a wing to a kite, and sometimes we do strapless, twin tip, and winging in the same day when we are in a rush. So, plus the foil, the mast, and the stabilizer, and the adjustment of the stabilizer. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to give all this knowledge to Julien, because he's gonna be the manager one day and he has to know all this. And it was complicated for him to give him all the kiting history of testing, you know. How can I pass 17 years of testing of the bandit to him? But regarding foiling, winging, the sport was born with him. So he knows all the story and is really much involved into foiling now. He's really involved with practicing winging, soft foiling, sub downwind, so he's really into the development of those products now. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, your name doesn't get mentioned as part of the test team, Julien, but I know you have a bigger role than that here. But do you get involved heavily with the testing with Raf down at the
beach? Like you said, I think in foiling, I'm massively involved. Testing and also thinking about the future, what we should do to innovate, to build a range that will benefit every customer, you know, because one of the big question when you have a new sport and you're one of the leaders of the sport, you have to, every season you have to think, where will this sport go? What will people do in the next few years? And then we have to adapt our range and models and foils to what we think, where we think it will go. And that's super interesting to me. I feel so lucky to be in part of the industry right now. We see new sports happening, we see new products. I really feel lucky to be in this position. So yes, I'm testing a lot on the foil side, foil masts, boards, all of this, much more than kites and wings. I'm able to give a more detailed and accurate feedback on the foil side for sure. Mm. And I'm also able to think about where we want to go in the future in terms of range and foils. I think the new skate was a big part of that. Maybe we'll talk about it later, but having those mid-aspect versatile surf foils, I think this is the future for now.
Yeah.
Because we never know what's going to happen.
Always changing.
You know, that's completely crazy. I think we'll have more surprise in the next few seasons and years on the foil side. We're going to see new sports coming up. We're going to see completely new foil designs, and that's what I love too. So we're already thinking about that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how quickly the whole kind of sport's developed. I mean, is it easier, because I know how much testing you always used to do on the Bandit, which is the flagship kite that, you know, has been part of the F1 brand. I think we were talking about it at lunch, you know, it was 2007, I think, yeah, the first Bandit, yes. 2008 Bandit DOS, and sort of remembering those trips. But is it easier developing, you know, a new wing or a new foil, or is it just as hard as developing a kite? Because to look at a kite, you've got the bridle, you've got the lines, you've got, you know, yes, lots of different things. It's got to fly, for one. It's got to actually physically fly in the sky. Yeah. Whereas with a wing, you're holding it up in the air. It doesn't perhaps have to be as aerodynamic. With a foil, it's, you know, it's an aerofoil. Yes, there's a lot to it. But is it, you know, what's the hardest kind of thing to work on?
At the beginning, we thought that the wing is going to be easy, you know, because we were thinking that, yeah, kite should fly, should turn and all those things and jump and this. But then we quickly realized with Robert that on holding two handles and having no mast or no carbon mast, no button and just inflatable parts and improve it was not that easy.
Yeah.
So Robert was kind of worrying. I say, Robert, this is good. More difficult it is, and better it is for us, you know, because it's we know how to build proto, we have experience, so I prefer that sport is difficult on R&D, for sure. And we love it when it's difficult. So regarding control of the shape is more difficult on the wing than on the kite.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you don't have the bridle.
You don't have the bridle. It's not a C shape that is naturally like holding its shape, kind of. You hold the two handle and the rest of the wing
wants to collapse.
You know. Regarding testing, the advantage we have is that we don't have to adjust the bridle.
Yeah.
We test the wing, it's good, it's not good, then you have to build a new one. When we test the kite, sometimes we have to spend 2 or 3 days adjusting the bridle to be sure we are using the kite in its best shape. So it's two different jobs.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Very
and
different.
And we have an issue for the wings is that we don't have, at the beginning we didn't have the right material because we were using materials and clothes from the kiting. The material from windsurfing or sailing, they were too heavy, and the material from kiting are a little bit too light. So now we are starting to have our own clothes for winging, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. And then with the foil testing, Julian, what's the hardest part about that?
On the foil is we think about, everyone thinks about the design, and especially the front wing design, and everyone seems to forget, you know, the fuselage diameter, the stabilizer, the quality of the mast. And again, I think people only start to understand also the construction is important, because you can have the best design, but if your mast is a wet spaghetti, then you won't go anywhere, you know. If you want a high quality foil, you need a high quality composite construction. So I think one day all the design will kind of look alike, you know, and the quality of the craftsmanship will make a big difference. And my dad was pretty smart on this one, hiring a composite engineer 2 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
And for the last 2 years, he's been working on improving our composite construction. You saw it yesterday. We have a workshop in the office with a CNC machine and everything to build the foil. So right now we make sure we have the best possible construction as well as the best possible design. And for testing, it was quite difficult at first for the first few years because we are used to the testing process of the kites where we can receive a few kites every week to test and feedback on. And we couldn't do that for the foiling because to build the foil you need a mold, and mold is expensive and it's a long process to do. So it was pretty frustrating and I wasn't happy about that. So that's why we built this workshop, to be able to be in the water with the foil we design in a matter of days instead of months, you know. So on a Monday, we can have Charles, our naval architect and foil designer, designing the foils. And on a Saturday, we can be in the water with those foils that, you know, we made here in the headquarters. So that's a huge advantage. You know, as a, we can call ourselves a big company now. We don't want to be this big dinosaur that is not able to react quickly. We want to have the reactivity of a shaper, of a garage shaper, with the distribution power of a big company, you know. And to have both, it's really difficult. So that's what I think we achieved in the last 2 years, trying to innovate and, you know, while staying one of these big industry guys. That was a challenge that was interesting to work on.
Yeah, difficult. It's difficult to navigate when it grows so quickly. It suddenly becomes so big, and then it's like, well, we don't want to be, like you say, someone that can't react quickly and make things happen. Because you have a really fast turnaround on the prototypes. You touched on it there, that, you know, Charles Bertrand, who's the naval architect here at F1, designs all the CAD designs for the foils. And then you can obviously, now with the workshop, which I've seen, which is really impressive, knock them up in a week and be testing them at the weekend. But again, with the wings and the kites, you send the feedback to Robert, and then he sends the new designs to Asia, and I think it takes like 7 days or something.
Yeah, sometimes
5 days.
Most of the time we try to send design in the Sunday evening.
Yeah.
So next Friday they are in the office. It's like
ready for the weekend.
2 days for the building the prototype and 2 days for the UPS shipping. So Friday morning they are there. We try to test Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We look for the wind. We drive 1 or 2 hours if we need, and then we have a feedback on the prototype. And about foil, what I would like to say is that we are trying to really put out the perfect product, so we are sure that it will last 1, 2, 3 years. Like if you look at our range, we have the Phantom, the Seven Seas, the Eagle, and now the Skate. And even the Phantom, after a little bit more than 2 years, they are still super good foil and not updated. So if we do the R&D and testing properly, and we manage that, for example, the new Skate is fantastic for average guy, for our top rider, good for pumping, good for handling, good for downwind. It will be a perfect product for the customers, and it will last a long time on the market. It's a little bit more complicated when you go into composite product, because you need to buy mold, build mold, organize all the layup inside. It's when the mold is finished, we still have to test a different layup we will put inside it. So sometimes it's a long process, and you cannot change a foil every year. It will be a huge mistake.
Yeah, because the expense of the mold and development and research.
You have no time. It's maybe 2 years to develop a foil now, to make it perfect almost. So even if we have a lot of proto, it takes time. You have the whole range, every size. So when you do it, you have to do it well. I see many companies changing model all the time, changing the mass foot connection so customer are lost, or changing screws or whatever. So this isn't really what we don't want to do.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, because you look at you know, some of the other brands out there, and there's so much product. I mean, we'll get onto that in a minute, because you guys have a lot of products, but you have kind of in the foil range, there's sort of four key foil platforms. And what we notice whenever we're testing them, or anyone's riding them, we let people ride the gear that we get on test, is it just works out of the box. You know, there's no need to sort of mess around with shims or file bits down or change this or do that, or you've got to play with the mast foot according to what wind. I remember riding with someone, he's going, I've got to put my mast all the way forwards because it's really windy and I need to be like changing this, and I've literally put the mast in the one spot where it was balanced, never moved it, never touched it, never done anything. And I guess that's down to the amount of work that you guys do behind the scenes that people don't often realize goes on, where you don't release it unless you are 100% happy that it's perfect.
Yeah, you can put any stab on any foil without adjustment at F1. Or you can place your mast in the morning and ride a Phantom, a Eagle, a Seven Seas, or skate, and you didn't move your mast. And no matter the size of the foil, you can jump from 750 to 1,200 without moving your mast.
That's quite impressive, because I guess for someone who's a rider, that just takes a lot of the trial and error out, that they set their mast in one place and they change the foil. They're not suddenly having to relearn where to stand and the balance and, you know, where all the center of effort is and the energy is coming from. It just makes it much easier for people to jump on and enjoy it, right?
I think we have Charles Bertrand as a naval architect since 10 years.
Yeah, I remember he came on with the first kite foils that you were producing.
So everything is balanced by the same guy and the same testing team since the first day. And when you have such a strong platform and you're bringing a new product, we adapt. He's getting the same standard as what you have from before, you know. So the standard is so high, then everything has to be at the same level. So same team for 10 years is not like maybe some other brand that is buying one design from someone and another design from another designer and then try to mix it into the range.
Is this another big thing that I've noticed since this trip, and to extent last time I was here as well, is that you do pretty much everything in-house, right? So everybody at F1 is doing everything. You're not outsourcing designs here or getting someone to work on something there. It's everybody is working for F1 and part of the team.
Yeah, every product is done by us. We never buy a design from outside, but it's even true for graphics.
Marketing.
All
the marketing thing. We don't have no agency. We do everything in-house. We have 6 graphic designers. You know, we have a content writer, she's a journalist. I mean, we really do everything in-house. We don't need any agency or anything. We believe that being in the headquarters here, there's an atmosphere that is pretty special. And if we don't have the people working for the brand inside the headquarters understanding this philosophy and atmosphere, then it's just not working. You know, we tried in the past to work with people outside and they didn't seem to understand where we wanted to go and how we wanted to work, and having people inside here with us sharing more than just, you know, a salary and some work is the right way to go for us. It changes everything.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a, you know, I've mentioned it before, I think when we did our last podcast, it's interesting, Raf, that everybody you meet that works for F1 shares that same ethos. And I think you said at the time that if they're not like me, they can't come and work for F1 because we won't get on. So they have to be kind of similar kind of personality and values, and that must be a thing. But to double I think you've doubled the team since I was last here, from like 20 to over 40 almost. How hard was that recruitment process? Because I know, you know, running the business that we run, finding good people is really difficult.
It's difficult. Sometimes we have found people that were really matching everything and they wanted to come, and suddenly it was complicated for them because their wife has a job where they used to live and she cannot move, or because they have the kid at school, it's complicated to change town. So we have to find the right people. We have to move them into Montpellier. So yeah, it's a challenge. Some of them, they were coming from Biarritz and they couldn't leave surf, you know, because if you live in Biarritz over there, you know, you will surf every week. So yeah, it's a challenge to find the right person and then be able to move them to Montpellier. It's something.
Yeah, I remember we've talked about it before. It's, you know, Montpellier is a lot better than Munich or some of these other places where it's like you're not near the sea or anything like that. But obviously, it's, you know, it's not known for its waves. It's not you know, known for its mega kite conditions. You get good winds, you know, but it's not super regular like Lucat or somewhere like that. Yeah. But it still works. So I guess now with winging and the way the sports have changed, like chatting to you guys these last couple of days, you've said that you're not traveling anymore because you've got everything you want right here, which is an interesting perspective to have.
Yeah, it's true, but still, hiring the right person, it's a challenge.
Yeah,
I think it's more difficult in France than everywhere in the world. Maybe the French, they don't like to move, really. They don't like to move from place to place like maybe they are used to do in the US. It's normal. You have the grandparents in your hometown. It's a big advantage if you have kids, you know. So it's a huge decision. Some people were living in the Alps and they love to go skiing in the weekend. And some people were living in Biarritz and they have the surf. So we are not in the Alps and not in the surf area. We have to create our own world of kiting and winging and surf foiling or sup foil downwind in Montpellier to attract people. Because of course, if you want to walk into our company, you are practicing the sport.
Yeah.
Many of us are practicing the sport.
Many. We also faced a lot of people that wanted to do some home office, and for the reason I explained earlier, we're not really happy with that. So that was since COVID, I think it was a big challenge to tell people you're gonna come at 9 in the morning and leave at 6 in the evening, and that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge too.
Yeah. It's definitely that they're sort of changing that a little bit in the UK now because so many people are working from home, and there's really not been a big resurgence back to the office. But you know, it's something I didn't really think about. You've got everyone back in the office here, back to usual business and cracking on. But I guess with so many products to deal with, and that was another thing we wanted to talk about was, you know, when F1 was always known as, you know, all we do is kiteboarding. And for a long time, you just had one kite because all you needed was the Bandit. There was no need for anything else. And I think we said the other day, I think even I said to you, Raf, you have 7 kites now. And you're like, no, 6. And then so he counted and went, no, it's 7.
So the change.
Yeah, the product code, the amount of SKUs you must have across all the sports must be insane now. Like, absolutely bonkers.
But on all the sport like kitesurfing, you have like specialist of everything now. Some people, they want to do only strapless surfing. Some people want to do bigger, and some people kite foil only, and they all need the best product for what they are doing. So covering everything with one Bandit was a little bit tough now.
Yeah.
Because you have so many new discipline and so many specialists of those disciplines. So we had to separate the Bandit with the Bandit S, and now we need a bigger kite, and now you need a kite for double loop and this. Yeah, it's much more work, but we are trying to only produce the specific size. Like if you look the Bullet, which is really the mega loop kite, it's from 6 to 9 only. So we try to target what we really need and not to like from 5 to 15 every range. The Breeze is a one strut kite, it's for big size and so. And the wing, we have 3 wings. So it's again 3 different use. Like CWC, it's really light wing. Strike can do everything, and the swing, we bring it more into wave riding than free fly and something super light and only in your end.
Yeah, it's interesting to sort of think how much work goes into it. I mean, you mentioned the graphic designers earlier, Julian. They're designing all the graphics for all the products, as well as all the marketing, adverts, brochures, website, everything else. It's like,
text.
There's like a huge task. Is it ever? Does it ever get daunting, or is it just every day you just get on and crack on with it?
Yeah. It's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, huge energy for me, Julien, and Sophie every day. We always forget about Sophie.
Yeah, I know. I was going to mention her, that your wife is...
I don't forget about my mom.
No, but when we do interview, she's never there, you know. Yeah. But it's the key element of the company. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, that was my next thing, was talking about how it's family, that everyone knows Raf and Julian, but obviously you Sophie's running the operations. And that's probably a bigger task than anything, right?
Yeah, you ask how it was to develop so many products, but... double the turnover in 2 years was really a challenge for Sophie financially.
Yeah.
If you want to double the turnover, you need to be strong on the cash flow.
And without investors or
without
banks.
Without investor, or without asking the bank, and really be independent fully. And suddenly you need to buy 2 times the amount of product.
You've got to be able to fund that to then be able to sell it.
She did a really good job too.
Yeah.
Without her, we could not buy enough, you know, to be able to grow.
Yeah.
So you develop product and then you don't sell them because
you cannot buy them,
which is a little bit stupid.
Chicken and egg, what comes first?
Yeah, so it's a balance of a lot of things.
Yeah.
When you see the company, it's a balance of your financial power, innovation power, the sales force. Yeah.
And it's, you know, we were chatting just beforehand that F1 is now the only major family brand left in the business, right? With, you know, Raf and Sophie started it a long, long time ago. One of the first companies to produce kite boards that was production value, that you were shipping out from near here with the cardboard that you stole out of the recycling boxes at the airport and doing all of that. So to still be here, you know, how many years has it been running now? Must be
95, 96.
Yeah, so getting on for 30 years.
Almost.
And to still be 25. Family owned and run is pretty impressive. Yeah. And obviously...
But I heard the interview from Robbie when he sold the brand. And he said in this interview, say, I don't know how Raphael is doing to be so motivated still today, but this is not only Raphael, that's the trick. Sophie is there and now Julien. So with Sophie today, we are working really hard so we can pass on to Julien.
Yeah.
If Julien was not there, we are not sure we will be so motivated to keep pushing the company so far, you know. We push it far because we know it's going to take it over.
Yeah, and that was my next question going to be that obviously, you know, 4 years ago, Julian, you were heading up Manera, and now you're being sized up for Raphael's shoes.
I still kept both. Yeah, I'm still brand manager for Manera and F1, but I got a great team on both brands, so I can, you know, it's totally doable to do both brands. Whether I'm gonna take over the company or not is the question I've been asked since I'm 6 years old. So
the answer was yes at 6 years old.
No, not at all.
Raf wasn't in the background with a sign.
That's it.
Say yes.
No, I made up. I really didn't want to do that because I wanted to do my own thing. You know, that was my goal. I kind of found it with Manera because that was really part of F1, but a side project that I was responsible for 100%. That was what I was looking for.
Yeah, because you did a bit of time at Quicksilver before that, didn't
you? But not like just 1 year.
Just 1 year, and that was when you came and set up Manera.
Yeah, after I came back in Montpellier, was looking for a job. My dad told me, come for 6 months, you know, we do a 6 months contract and that's going to give you another experience to find another job after. And that was a hook and I got hooked.
Come for 6 months.
He got me, completely got me.
Never leave.
And then I stayed after 6 months. It was natural for me to stay. And then Manera was there, already existing, kind of left on the side, you know. And I was like, hey, maybe I can take over this brand and try to do something. And I'll always remember my mom saying, you know, I don't think you will have enough work with this brand. And now there's a full team and everything, so it feels good.
Yeah, but, I mean, the growth of Manera has been amazing, really. It's gone from, you know, from not existing not that long ago, I think 2015 was the first harness, maybe?
Yeah, 14.
Exo, 2014, yeah, 2014, yeah, the Exo harness. I remember that in Mauritius, and I remember that event really well because Raf said to everybody, everyone goes on these events to see the new kites and everyone comes with their harness, their wetsuit. Mm. And it was like, right, you all have to put your harness in a box. You're not allowed to use it. And you have to use one of these harnesses that we have here for you. And we've sized it up.
Yeah.
So you have the spreader bar and you get the right size. And then you just have to use it for one session. And then if you want your harness back, you come and see us. I don't think anyone asked for their harness back.
Because we destroyed your harness.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it was... well, the goal is not to be big with Manera.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be big. That's why we don't do... you know, low-cost products, school products, all of that. Focus on high-quality stuff. And yeah, the goal is, like F1, I think, is just to be proud of what we sell, you know, and use ourselves. That's really the goal. So I'm really happy on where we are today with Manera. Really, really happy about that. But yeah, to come back on whether I'll take over F1, I think I made up my mind just a few years ago. It was pretty recent, you know. It's been a lot of pressure all my life. And it's like when you're going to pass an exam,
yep.
You know. You have a lot of pressure before. And once you're in the exam, writing down stuff, then the pressure goes and you're flowing.
Your knowledge comes in and you just, yeah.
Yeah, and the more I got experience... I've been in the brand for 10 years now, this month. So the more I got experience, the more the pressure was just disappearing. And now I feel completely ready. You know, I still have a lot to learn, but I still have both my parents. That helps me a lot. So yeah, now I'm more ready than ever. Yeah, I would say.
Are you ready to step down though, Raf? Really? You think you're
going
to
retire?
Kind of. I can't imagine ever rocking up here.
He's ready to step down, but he's still really looking, you know, over my shoulder.
It's really funny, you know, we'll be 60 next week.
And yeah, 6-0.
6-0, sorry.
6-0, sounds better.
It's really funny to see how you change. When I was 20, 30, 40, 50, it's way different. Yeah, it's super different, and I'm so proud to have the chance to have Julien taking over the company. Otherwise, we will have to sell it.
Yeah.
And it's painful. It's like selling your baby, you know. So I'm proud he's motivated, but even more proud he's able to, because it's a huge machine now. So you have to take, all day long, we have to take decisions. Managing is taking decision. Every 5 minutes you receive a mail and you have to answer yes, no. Every 10 minutes you have someone stepping into your office. What do we do for that? Do I do this or that? And you have to decide. So you have to have that knowledge of be able to manage and decide and do the right decision every day. It's tough.
Yeah. And tough. Hundreds of decisions a day.
Yeah. And so, the right one. And the vision of what will be the future of the sport, where we should go, what we should do, the vision of the image you want to give. And Julien had few challenges in Manera. We went into wetsuit.
Yeah.
When you went into wetsuit, it was like, wow, everyone told us, never do wetsuit, you're going to have only problems, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you need so many sizes, so many different body shapes, and getting it in shops is difficult with so many brands already out there. It's
busy. That was the first challenge he had to go through, and the second challenge was when he decided to go into the surf market. That was huge for a brand from Montpellier with such a short experience on wetsuit, because we don't do wetsuit since 100 years. But he did it well. He catch the right image, he give the right image of the brand. So that is impressive, I will say.
Yeah.
Two big challenges that many famous brands didn't do.
Yeah.
If you look into the windsurf or kite business for accessories and wetsuit, Manera is the first brand to have such a reputation into surfing.
Yeah.
Pure surf.
Yeah, I mean, you were telling me, Julien, it's huge in California, right?
Yeah.
It's like, which is
that's
O'Neill's back garden.
That's half of our business now, surfing, and especially the U.S. We've got a great team there. And I don't know, I feel like, you know, people are really looking for new brands. Surfing is pretty poor in terms of new brands, you know, especially in the neoprene area. You have those big monster company owned by financial companies, you know. It's not made for surfers by surfers anymore, and I think people kind of looking for that more family company with principle, you know. And when we got into our first shop in California, then I think this family brand, high quality stuff, and with core principles like support your local shops and everything we have, it appealed to them. They really resonated with what we did, and then they tried the product and they loved it. So that was instantly a big boom, and then we had many shops contacting us, and then COVID hit and it was a shortage of neoprene. And then the Manera name was out there already, and a lot of shops contacted us, got the wetsuit in the racks. And then once you're in the shop, the owner of the shop and the salespeople love the product, use it themselves. And then the customer started knowing the Manera name and buying it and being happy. And then the world went around, and we grew from there. So it was really organic. That's what I love too. Really small marketing budget compared to our competitors and all of that. But yeah, we got a foot in surfing, and I love that because I've surfed since I'm really young. Always considered myself a surfer as well as a kite surfer and now foiler. But I was super proud to be able to work with shops, magazines, athletes that I've been following for years. And now those guys are contacting us and we work together. So that feels really good. That doesn't mean I'm, turn away from the wind sports at all. But I really like the idea of having 50%, 50%. I really like the idea of doing water sports in general, not just being a surfer or a kite surfer, you know. I like having the van full of toys and go to the beach, and then you decide what to do depending on the conditions. I think that's the future. I don't want to just be a surfer or, you know, focused on one sport. I don't think this is a good idea, at least for me. I want to spend the most time in the water, whatever I do, and I think the customers are getting into the same state of mind more and more.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Like, you look at everyone's got, especially with winging, a lot of windsurfers have taken up winging, and quite a few kiters as well. And then it's like, oh, and then you've got the wing, okay, maybe have a go at surf foiling, and then got downwind sup coming soon, and so it's like it's all kind of changing.
I think the foil is the real thing that changed
that
mine.
That crosses all
you
the
know?
Sports.
It's not the wing, it's the foiling. Mm. Surfers got into foiling for different reasons, you know, maybe their local break is too crowded, so they wanted to go on, more metal waves that nobody wants, and then they started foiling because of that, and then they loved it because that's a great sport, and then they thought, hey, maybe I could use the wind now, you know. Surfers, when it's windy out there, they're on the couch watching Netflix, so don't go. So then they realize they can use the wing, and they buy a wing, and then they wing foil, and then they go into downwinds, and kite surfers and wind surfers, they do the same. So we kind of all gathered around the foiling spots. So that's why we need to consider foiling as, foiling is not just wing, it's a sport in itself, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
We want to be a foil company.
Yeah.
For sure.
As well.
But recognized as a foil company from everyone, the winger, the surfer, the downwind surf, everyone. Mm. We put aside maybe windsurf foiling because it's really specific, but all the other sport we focus on.
Because you don't know how to windsurf anymore, maybe. And you cannot develop gear.
It's too specific.
No, but this year we really realized that we want to have the F1 and Manera company built on four legs, which is Manera, F1 kites, F1 wing, and F1 foil as well, which includes surfing and downwind disciplines.
You touched on something there, talking about the wetsuits, which was when you got them in the shops and people tried the product, they really liked them. And that's one thing I've always found with the F1 equipment and the Manera equipment, like it's so well made and so polished and good that when you do try it, you're like, well, works really well. So that, I think that's something that you were touching on a little bit, Raf, that having something like the Strike 2, which has been out for so long, but you're still selling them because people still want them because they're really good, even though there's maybe been two or three new wings from other brands out there, but people are still buying the Strike 2 and they're waiting for the Strike 3, which I think is being released next week as we record this. So probably by the time you listen to this, it'll be in the shops. But is that always been a key that, you know, the product is the core driver?
The product is the main thing. This is what I love, you know. I love practicing the sport, but I really love the development side and creating new products. So the whole company is just there to satisfy my passion. Same for Julien. We are happy to make turnover because it will give us the opportunity to develop more
toys,
you know. But by talking with some of our dealers, they tell us that something is different with F1 is that people step into the shop and they want a Strike or a Bandit or a Phantom, but they don't know F1 sometimes. They know the name of the product. So they come really for the Phantom, the Bandit, or any things we are doing. So sometimes the name of the product is more famous than the brand.
The actual brand,
Yeah, but it's hard to create. Some brands are trying since years and they cannot do it, so. We are proud about this.
And that probably comes back to all of the testing and all of the riding that you do. You know, I've had friends come up to me and they're like, wow, you were getting such long rides on that foil and it was working so well. And I'm like, I just know that if Raf's tested it, it's made it to market, it's probably going to work really well. Like, it's always like a pleasure to jump on the equipment.
Sometime we talk with Sophie and she said, Raf, place us into a trap, because if we fucked up something, it's a disaster, we don't sell any. It's the order, it's a good product and our customers are waiting this, and we educate them in fact to that little drug of getting a new product and having new feelings. Then if we are not able to do it, then we don't sell nothing. So sometimes we are late on the product because I know they are not ready for the market. Like the Strike V3 should have come in January, but I was not fully ready, so it will come only in April. But like you said, the chance we have is that every people with a Strike V2 will never buy something else. They all will wait until the V3 is coming. So it's a little bit painful sometimes for our dealer because they don't sell nothing until we are ready, but when it's ready, then they sell them 10 by 10.
Yeah.
You know, so it's okay.
Yeah. It must be difficult for Sophie from a business perspective as well, because when you're not selling, you know, as many because people are waiting for the new one, she's going to be, come on, Raf, and it's time to get it out there because we need to get the turnover going and the money coming in. Yeah. But it's interesting that, you know, a lot of companies would go, okay, we just, on this date, it's ready, it goes, it sells, but you're not like that.
No, because it will be good for 1 month. It will be good for 1 month, and then we will have a big drop because our customers are not used to that. So it's better to wait 3 months, and in 1 or 2 months, we will catch back the turnover we have lost since January. But it has to be a success, otherwise it's a big crack.
Yeah.
And she knows about it.
Yeah, she knows. She's used to it.
They've been together for 40 years. So yeah. She knows how to handle, 30 years, handle so. My dad. Yeah. For sure. No, don't worry.
No choice.
Yeah, she's just like, okay, come on.
But it's funny, Julien is the same now. Yeah. But he's still like for the skate. the six mold were ready, we were ready to launch, and then I said to Julien, I've been falling today 2-3 times, and the next day I went sup and I fall again. I said, there is something wrong into the new skate, so we need to rework everything. So it was not really happy, but then we spent 4 months to create the perfect product, and again, we are late, but they will arrive next tomorrow.
They arrived already.
They arrived. They are
coming.
Yeah,
some size are in the warehouse. So that yesterday I was stoked because that was a long long R&D process. I think we got the first sample in
September.
Chicama when I was in Chicama. So that was that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
The product was great and ready to go, and he wanted to have a little bit more maneuverability, so we had to do it all over again. but we did, and I'm happy because the product is perfect now. So
yeah, it's quite an interesting case for a business that is, I guess, because it is family owned and you can make your own decisions. Yeah. You know, if you've got to answer to shareholders and you have to tell them, well, we've made 6 molds and it's kind of ready, but then Raf decided he doesn't like it, so we're back to the drawing board, and it's going to take another 4 months of R&D and tweaking the molds and, you know, trying to make it work. That's quite a unique business case that, you know, a lot of companies don't get that luxury.
Yeah, but only the shareholder, not only the shareholder get like sometime worrying, our distributor.
Yeah.
They are waiting the product and they are not coming sometimes.
Shops, distributors, the end consumer too.
End consumer, you know, they can
wait. There are a lot of people who I wing with who are like, when's the store? And I said, oh, I'm going to CF1. And they're like, when is it? I said, I've seen one.
Yeah.
I've touched a Strike V3.
Yeah. We received some insults from friends and customers. So like, when the fuck is it coming?
Yeah, if you plan your holidays, you know,
yeah, and you
long
want
time
the new
in
wing.
Advance, you're going somewhere in the world and you want the new toys, and we don't, so either we don't have enough for everyone or either they are not ready. But the most essential is that when they are there, they are working well, you know. It's the priority of the priority.
Yeah.
And no one will tell us when this should be lunch or not. Only the product is speaking by himself.
Yeah, when the product is ready, it's ready to go. Which is why people, when they buy F1 gear, tend to stick with F1 because they know the story behind the brand, which I think, you know, we've talked about it a lot in the magazine in the past and podcast, but I still think there's people out there that, you know, perhaps new to the sport because they've come in from winging and they don't know so much the history and how much effort you put into creating each product. I think it's interesting to kind of revisit it a little bit.
Yeah, it's super interesting when you have a new sport like winging coming, because you have 20 years of kitesurfing, and some people, they stay with the same brand. They don't even know why since the first day, but they're not ready to change. But if you bring them a new sport, then they will completely look at the new situation and they will jump into F1, even if they were like from some other brand for kiting. So when you have a new sport coming, it's a huge opportunity for us to grab new customer that we never change, no matter what we were doing in kiting. If you compare this to cars, it's a bit the same with electric car. You have a new generation of car, electric one, and then you have suddenly Tesla coming and some other brands from other places, and they start to sell much more than the famous brand from before. So it's really tricky when you have a new sport. You need to jump into it and do good right at the beginning, otherwise you will never catch back.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking at the Reader's Awards for Tonic, you cleaned up pretty much won every award there was out there, which when I was looking at the results, I mean, I see it anyway when I travel around. You always see F1 wings everywhere you go, so I sort of knew that you had a pretty big market share, but to see the results of that awards, I was like, whoa, you have a really big, really big market share. But then I think you jumped in heavy with a lot of marketing and really good product and like pushing with good riders and videos, and like you really, you know, got behind it, where I think some of the brands were maybe a bit more tentative, like, is it going to be big, is it not?
Yeah.
It felt like you guys were like, all in at the poker table. Let's go.
Yeah, there is two aspects. I came into the windsurf market in 95, 96 with my own brand, F1 for windsurf board. I was the last. Then I was the first into kiting, the first brand to deliver boards. Kite board was F1. But I had no network, no financial power, no communication power, nothing. So it was tough to, we tried to jump into SAP market. But the brand from the US and the US market, they were too much in advance, so we never catch back. Even if we had really good board for surfing, we could never catch back the success from the others. So when I saw that I was over 50 years old, there is a new sport coming, I said, no, this one is for us,
yeah,
for sure.
We're having this one.
No chance for you guys. That's the first thing, you know, it was maybe the only chance we had to be the leader of something since the beginning of our career. And second is that I am the boss, I am the owner. I go in the water one day with a shitty piece of wing that was the first prototype. When I came back to the office, I decided that we should go full on. I don't have to call no one, you know.
Yeah.
Make a big meeting, call my director of sales and my marketing director or whatever, investor, and that should allow me to push full speed into the wing. So that was two things, important things. And then the way we can develop fast was so important too.
Yeah.
I think we loved it. That's the thing too. That's the big difference.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure a lot of brands just didn't like winging or didn't get it. You know,
they didn't believe.
So when you don't like the sport, you don't put all the efforts to develop it. But we loved it. So
it's funny to see how sometimes the development team from those brands, they were fully into winging, but the management didn't push, you know, and slow them down, in fact. Because most of the people from the R&D, they felt the same thing as we felt. It's a fantastic toy to go upwind and go down free flying on the foil. It was funny. So the fact that the R&D director is as well the director of the brand, it's like making things a lot more efficient and faster.
Yeah, it definitely feels like you caught it bang on the right time and have done really well out of it. Talking of new sports, there's the big buzzword in the industry, which obviously is the SUP foil downwind, which everyone's talking about. I know coming here, I've had a look at the new boards that you're working on, and I know, Julian, this is all you do. I think Chloe was telling me you didn't even take a harness when you went to Dakhla on holiday, you just took your SUP board.
She's a snitch. Yeah, I took my paddle and my surf to Darla.
Yeah,
that was new for me. Yeah. I mean, we've been on foils for, you know, since the early days of kiting. I'm really passionate about foiling. It's something that really burns inside of me. So then winging and surf foil, and then we started doing a lot of tow-in, downwind behind the boats because at the really early days, subfoiling was super hard to do because we didn't have the right gear, right foils, right boards. And with three friends, we bought a little boat and we were just like going out there in the storm and like strong wind and, you know, like getting full on wet and everything, and we've been towing on the first foils that were clearly not made for downwind. But once you're up in the bumps and flying out there far from the shore, surfing, because it's clearly surfing, without a wing in your hand or, you know, anything, you know, bulky in your hand, that's the best feeling in the world, I think, personally. Much better than everything else, even surfing. So I decided to learn how to paddle because I'd never been on a SUP before, and that was super hard. And I got stuck out there offshore for a few hours, not able to, you know, to take off. It got my dad worried a little bit. and recently with the new boards and the new, especially the new foils, I can feel that it's much easier to get into this new sport than ever. And I'm really passionate about it. I'm trying to get all my friends and colleagues into the sports, and I can see that. But even 1 year ago, it was just not possible, you know, because they were trying and they just didn't like it because they didn't succeed. And now I can see that I got new friends. I got friends that are new into the sports, and they, in like about 2 to 3 sessions, they can take off. Most of them are already good wing foilers, so they know how to downwind. And once you know how to take off, then off you go, you know, you can ride and surf the offshore bumps for hours. And it feels really good to see that this sport is getting more accessible. And yes, that's almost everything I do now. Even when I don't have the logistics to do a proper downwind, we go upwind with the wings and then deflate it out there, pack it in a bag, and then paddle back downwind. You know, it's pretty much everything we do, because for me there's nothing better than this. And from, you know, Instagram, social media, I can see that a lot of people are getting into it. A lot of them are beginners, but what I really like to see is that even if it's super hard still, then people, they don't manage for 2, 3, 10 sessions, but you know, 11th session they're gonna take off and feel that feeling of flying and surfing the bumps, and they're gonna get hooked, and then they're gonna continue for sure. So I think, yeah, the downwind sub thing is I think it's gonna be a small market for sure, but I think it's gonna be probably the most elite thing to do in the water, so people are gonna look up to it. And I think being the leaders in this category is important for a brand.
Yeah,
it's important for me because I love it too, obviously. Yeah. So it's kind of selfish, but yeah. And I think we're not ready to see everything that will come with it. You know, we see now the deflators going upwind with the wing and then deflating it. But you know, we never know what kind of gear we're gonna see that will. Will go with the downwind practice. Maybe surfers will get into prone without the paddle, you know, we never know. So that's gonna be, I'm really eager to see what's gonna happen in the next few years or even months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys are always passionate about it being an easy thing to do. Yeah. And like my previous experience of downwind SUP is, you know, listening to some of the pros on the podcast that we do, and they're like, unless you have perfect conditions and you're super fit and you're really good at paddling, don't even think about it. And then you get the other guys, oh, it's so easy. And you kind of know they're lying. And Jack, our editor at Tonic, he's busy, you know, getting into it and trying. And I know he's like a mega athlete that runs 100-mile ultra marathons in, you know, sub 24 hours. So it's interesting to come here and see you guys talk about it as if it's, oh, no, you know, it's fine if you've got the right equipment. Yeah. It's not hard at all. Raf, how have you found it? Because, you know, you're about to turn 60. You wouldn't look, I mean, I know you're exceedingly fit for your age and you don't look a day over 40, but, yeah, you know, how did you find it as getting into it?
I never went into surf foil because it's painful for my back to do prone, you know. So yeah. I've been a sub foiler since the first time I saw Kylie on the video straight away.
I remember when you were teaching Twiggy in Mauritius that time, and we were foiling, getting chased away
so
by
I've
the
been
white shorts.
Foiling since the beginning, and then Julien started to cross the bay in Montpellier, sometime in full winter time with wind that is dropping suddenly, and he sometimes stay like a few hours outside without safety boat, you know. And I was on the other side of the bay, on the onshore side.
Waiting.
testing my stuff and always looking outside, where is Julien? So I said, now this is enough, you guys, you are taking too many risks. We're going to buy a boat. So then we get the boat and I said, okay, now I get into the sport. Because I have the safety and I can test many things in 10 minutes, you know. Jump into the boat, change the board, change the foil. So since we have the boat, I've been really impressed by the discipline. Because we were starting by small 4.2 boards, launched by the boat, towing. And then you let go the rope and you go in front of the boat is behind.
Yeah,
and you are alone on the sea, surfing all those bumps, and it was really a great, great feeling. So I said, okay. And then we saw the SUP, the new generation of SUPs, and we went into it, and I realized that I was able to take off in most of the conditions.
Yeah.
So that's good.
And do you think it's easier when the wind is stronger? Or
You need stronger wind, but now they can take off into flat water with the proper foil.
They're doing some crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, things are improving super fast. The other day I was on my 7-0 in a small 15 to 18 knots thermic wind we have only in the afternoon with like 40, 50 centimeter chop.
Super small chop.
Yeah, and with the 70s 1400 I was able to take off quite easily. It was easier to take off than surfing those small bumps where you needed to pump a lot and things like that. So I said, okay, if I can launch in those conditions, I can launch in any wing or any type of chop. So that's cool. Yeah. You just need a bigger foil. The young kids, they can take off with a smaller foil than myself. They are more explosive and they are able to paddle and pump harder than I can. So I always have maybe a bigger foil than they are. But it's good because if you only look at the top rider, young and fit, then you might develop equipment that is too extreme.
Yeah.
It's good that I get into the sport and I do the things that the 6-0 guys can do.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, it's true, right? If you're looking at getting into it, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of the people that can afford this kind of setup, because that's something to remember, right? If you're a young pro rider, you're getting it at a discount or, you know, being paid to ride it. Whereas the people that are the end consumers going in the shop and buying it are probably, you know, if they've got that kind of spare disposable income, especially at the moment with the price of electricity and fuel and everything else, then, you know, they're not going to be the fittest guys on the block. Yeah. So they're going to want equipment
to make it
that's
right.
kind of easy.
But I've been sailing, riding into our bay since I'm 13. So almost 50 years. And one evening after doing the downwind with the boat, and I say, wow, across the bay, totally by myself, without any sail or any kite or any wing, just using the energy from the sea was a shock for me. To know, okay, you can do 15 kilometers not using the wind and just the energy from the sea that is down under. But I didn't know. I didn't know how to use it for almost 50 years. It's impressive.
There was I was pushing him to come with us on a small boat that we bought with my friend for 1 year or 2 years. I was pushing you and he was like, nah, your boat is too small. It's going to take 2 hours to go upwind. And he was right. And then when we got the F1 boat and we got on the first downwind, that was the first thing that I was teaching him. So that felt good. And then I saw his face after the first downwind that he succeeded at. And I immediately knew that something clicked, you know. And I knew that we were going to have a huge foil and board range for foiling from there.
Sophie's getting a huge headache because you boys are asking for more money to develop more stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, the downwind days, we are watching the weather forecast for the downwind days like if you were watching the best swell coming, you know, it's the same It's the most important day of the month if we can do
get the big wind and then you're like
stormy weather.
Yeah, and we talk to Hawaiians or people from the gorge and everything, and it's the same for them.
Mm.
And, but you know, Hawaii, they have good waves. So
weird. Let's not forget you're doing this off the coast of Montpellier, which is not known for its swell, right?
Hey, we
it's
got
just wind swell that you're riding.
Yeah.
We got a Hawaiian guy visiting this month.
Yes.
And I think he only visits the Italy and France for downwind, you know, because he saw some videos.
So he's like, oh, I'm going to go downwind.
So now we got Hawaiians coming to the Mediterranean to go in the water. That's huge.
It's the best day of surfing you get in the winter, or the best snowfall you have, and you will go in the best powder of the winter. The best downwind day they are in the calendar.
Yeah,
you remember them, you know, like crazy.
So, and what is it, do you think, about the equipment that you've been developing that makes it more accessible to people? What are the kind of distinct
the
changes?
The first
you're
board
doing?
we designed with Charles, they were pretty much like what we saw on internet from Hawaii, or what we have seen in the gorge. And I jump on them and I say, oh my God, this is really difficult. They're super narrow in the front, super narrow on the tail, a bit rounded shape maybe on the bottom, and they're really working well, but quite difficult to manage. So we redesign everything, like wider nose, wider tail, parallel rails, the proper rocker line, the proper volume in the front, so you don't nose dive. And the second generation was really much easier board. Like I was forced to use a 7.6, and when the new generation arrived, I was really easy on the 7.0. So flying on the 7.6 board is not so nice. When you start to fly on the 7.0, it's a much better feeling. So I was quite happy. Yeah, and they will improve in the years.
Yeah.
And many things will happen for sure. The deflator way is a good way, because if you have a pump in your bag, a small one, and you have some trouble
you couldn't reinflate
doing it. the takeoff somewhere, then you can reinflate. Yeah, we will see. It's I'm so surprised how many video we see and how many boards are popping out from all the shapers.
Yeah,
because of all the brands, we are longer than the shaper, you know, before we can launch a product on the market. But all the shaper took it and they make it grow, and there is a lot of innovation because you have a lot of rider shaper working on the subject. So we see new videos with new design popping out every week. It's a fantastic energy. And most in the video, you see group of 2, 3, 4, 5 riders together having fun. And it's what we have noticed, is that we can ride together, talk to each other. We are not like hide behind the wing or far away from each other because you have a kite flying around. So it's a sport where it's not like surfing where you have to fight for your own wave. It's a swell that you can share. And few times we been eating each other in the middle of the sea, because
we got the whole sea and we can crash on each other. That happened to me once.
So it's funny, it's a new, it's maybe closer than snowboarding or skiing, where you can be a group and having fun without fighting for your wave or being away from each other because you have a kite or so. So it's I think we will have a new family of rider getting into that sport and love it.
Awesome. Excited to see the product hit the market. When are your SUP downwind boards going to be available?
Mid-June. First production.
Yeah.
That's going to be the first range. We're going to have 3 range. So this summer we'll release 2 new range.
Yeah. And in the range there's going to be what, high performance, medium performance?
We're starting with the versatile board, you know, something that we downwind with today. Like he said, when we tried the extreme shapes that you can see on Instagram, we didn't like it because it was too extreme. Only really good guys can use it. So we designed the board that pretty much everyone can use, you know. Obviously there are different sizes and liters, all of that. But it's accessible, so that's the difference. So we're gonna release this one, and then we went for the two other range, we went a bit narrower, a bit longer, you know, a bit less volume. So that's gonna be something more high performance.
Yeah, further down the line.
Interesting thing with the first range is its versatility. So you can downwind up for sure, but this board is always in the back of my van because that's the one I use when it's like 10 to 15 knots out there. Because with the wing, you can take off so easily with these new shapes that I don't even need a bigger wing than 4.2. I don't even need my light wing board anymore. So in my van, I have the 4.2 Rocket Surf, like 28 liter volume, and the SUP.
And that's it.
And that's it.
Go to boards.
And the 4.2 wing and the 3.5. I don't need anything else.
And a paddle.
Yeah, obviously a paddle. And then for small waves too, it's really good. Like when you have 20 to, you know, 60 centimeters waves, then you can have a lot of fun taking off far offshore in the swells with the SUP and then surfing all the way to the shore break and then pumping and take like 4 or 5 different waves. So I think the boards that we're going to release are not just made for downwind, even if it's the first purpose of them. It's also really good to do it in, you know, wing, light wind, and surfing small waves. I think also to come back on the price of this board, for sure these are carbon, you know, these are gonna be quite expensive compared to classic boards. But then if you can sell your light wind wing board and sell your bigger wings, then it's worth it, I guess. Yeah. Less equipment.
Yeah, and I guess you can suck foil on them as well in the waves.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's like perfect. You know, it's like a versatile board, light wind wing board, suck foil board, and a downwind board. It's like three tools in one.
Yeah,
you
can, exactly.
And so all the suck foiling in the waves is good practice for paddling. Because exactly. That's one of the key things we talked about is that, you know, the paddle skills, like you mentioned, Julian, having not paddled. Mm-hmm. That was something you had to kind of learn. Whereas for Raf, being a keen paddler from the early days of SUP, you have that technique. So, yeah, having something that people can practice on, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, it's exciting to see. Who knows? Maybe if I come visit in 4 years' time, it'll be completely different again.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Hopefully, now there's no COVID, it won't be 4 years.
Hopefully, you know, I like it when the industry is changing and there's new stuff going on. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it stays the same, we sometimes get a bit like jaded. Imagine if we're all just kite surfing.
On twin tips.
Yeah, on twin tips. Yeah, kite surfing on twin tips, doing back rolls and front rolls. Yeah, yeah. Be a very boring plan.
Maybe we'll be back to it.
Yeah. Well, look, guys, thank you very much for the time, Julian.
Thank you.
Raf, thank you for chatting.
Visiting us.
That's all right.
A pleasure to see you, like always.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Have a few pints.
Yeah. Always. Pints. Well, look, thanks, guys. So there we go. Episode 9. Feels like I've been doing quite a few of these lately. I've enjoyed putting them together. They do take quite a lot of time and obviously I'm quite busy, so it is tricky to get the time to put them together. Hopefully you enjoyed it and I've got one more episode recorded and then I think I'm up to date, which is a miracle. I've been having this hang over me for some time with a lot of episodes recorded but not actually putting them out there. So once I get the next one done, I'll be caught up. And I'll have to go out and start recording some more, which means getting on the road and sitting down with some people and travelling around a little bit, which, as you know, I tend to do quite a lot of. Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please give them a like and a share. Give them a 5-star thumbs up, whatever, on whichever platform you listen to them on. And just try and get them around, because the more that people listen to them, the more I'm encouraged to keep making them. Anyway, you've been listening to me, Roo Chater, and the Intriguing Beings podcast. Until next time.